public hearing on House Bill 5039, which is the Department of Revenue. And I appreciate the co-chairs coming in and helping us out with the quorum here. Susie, do you want to go ahead with the...
Madam Chair, for the record, could I clarify that we're in a work session rather than a public hearing?
We're going to go to the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 5039 Monday morning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, first of all, I apologize for my voice. Second, what I'd like to point out is that I've distributed for you a memo and also the detailed spreadsheet for the department budget. We didn't have this last Thursday because we were still finalizing some numbers, but we have that for you today. And this memo briefly summarizes what we did on Thursday, which was to go through a number of adjustments and packages in the department's budget and approve those. So unless there are questions, I won't repeat what we did on Thursday. I would like to draw your attention, however, to the spreadsheet just so that we can clarify some of the numbers in that before we go on with the remaining issues. You'll see, you'll see a summary sheet is on the front of this packet, and it shows you a number of numbers for the Department of Revenue's budget. And if I could just direct your attention to the 2103 current service level, just to get that on the record, the Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending that you approve that current service level of $112,734,721 general fund, $16,523,391 other funds, $186,544 non-limited other funds, for total funds of $129,444,656. Would be for 990 positions and 896.37 FTE. And I would point out that this current service level that the Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending does differ from the Department of Administrative Services recommended service level. And that is due to the differing treatment of Package 090. Department of Administrative Services treated that as a policy option package, and Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending that you treat it as an adjustment to arrive to the current service level number because of the department's position that by taking these reductions in that package, it doesn't, at least in the short term, impact their delivery of services.
Representative Butler? Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Dukes?
Well, I knew we had a weekend, and so now I may not... I may be seeing strange things, but if the 2001-03 current service level is the LFO recommendation, why is there another column that says LFO recommendation that has higher numbers?
Madam Chair and Senator Duke, we've got a number of, a lot of information on this page. The current service level amount is not the total budget that LFO is recommending. That's just one part of the budget.
Okay, so what you're saying is that your number for current service level is different than SAS's.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. And I just, for the record, wanted to clarify what we're recommending as current service level.
Okay.
So, Madam Chair,
I was just referring to the legislative fiscal recommendation about the current service level, Madam Chair, at the $129,444,656, 990 positions with 896.37 FTE.
I think I misunderstood Representative Butler. It's not 900 positions.
Well, 990 positions, which is equivalent of 896.37 FTE, and the reason is that you have so many part-time during the processing season.
Thank you. I misunderstood that. Sorry.
Positions in FTE are not always specific. Not ever.
Right.
We've heard the motion by Representative Butler. Any objection? Any discussion? I guess we've had discussion. Any objection? Not so moved.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then I would direct your attention to the memo which discusses the remaining items that we didn't get to on Thursday. And the first one listed there is Policy Option Package 140, and this is in the Department's Property Tax Division. This package would add $514,796 other funds expenditure limitation and seven positions, seven FTE for staff in this division for additional support to counties in administering the property tax system. And again, as we discussed last week, the governor's recommended budget uses $406,402 general fund from the base budget to fund a portion of this package, and the effect of this is to reduce grants to counties by this amount. If the subcommittee were to approve this package as it is in the governor's proposed budget, the department believes it can generate an additional $3.8 million in additional property tax revenues. If the subcommittee were to restore the funding for the county grants and approve only four positions and the other funds expenditure limitation, the department believes it will not be able to generate the same amount of property tax revenue, and currently it's estimating that it would only be able to generate somewhere around $900,000 to $1 million in property tax revenues with those four positions.
Not the 1.9 million.
That's correct. My memo does say 1.9 million. Representative Butler, thank you for pointing that out. That was based on information that I received last week, and I received current information, more current information this morning.
So it would be one point?
Madam Chair, it would be, they're estimating anywhere from $900,000 to $1 million that they would be able to generate in additional revenues versus the 1.9 that is shown in my memo.
So, Sue, if I understand correctly, if I may, Madam Chair, for an expenditure of an addition of four full-time positions, an expenditure of $515,000 approximately, we would generate additional revenue of somewhere between $900,000 to $1 million. That's as low as a return as 40% additional return above and beyond our costs to anywhere close to 48%, it looks like.
Madam Chair and Representative Butler, that's correct. I haven't had the opportunity to speak with the department why those numbers were revised. If you like, we could invite them to come up here and address that, why they were revised from the 1.9 million down to the 900.
Madam Chair, we also have the issue of the interest on the delinquent taxes and the necessity of a statutory change in order to effectuate to give us the flexibility to utilize those interest on delinquent taxes. So I would like to know the status of the legislation that would be proposed by the department.
Director Hanchin, could you want to come up and whoever else may be address this discussion? Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Elizabeth Harshenko, Director of your Department of Revenue. I've asked Gil Riddell to join me today because property tax is a partnership between the counties and the state. As we've discussed this property tax package and recognized the two different funding sources for the entire package, we talked about the fact that the general fund dollars don't have limits on how we might use them, and so our plan was that if we received those dollars, we would put three appraisers into our centrally assessed properties program, which is very high-end, high-value properties, telecommunications, energy companies, railroads, and airlines. And the bulk of the increase in value that we thought we could generate is in those very, very high-value complex properties. When you look only at the other funds portion of the package, there is a limitation in current law that the department may use those funds only for two purposes: direct assistance to the counties in the form of training or other support to the local programs. And of course, the state does not receive any property taxes. This is direct support to the local administration of the property tax system, and to do appraisal work for what are called secondary industrial properties. those properties whose values are between $1 million and $5 million. The potential for getting more value on the roll out of those kinds of properties is significantly lower than the very, very large high-value properties. We see much larger changes coming out of the high-value properties. So that's the reason that the revenue estimate is significantly lower. And the reason I asked Gil to come forward is we talked about the possibility of asking the revenue committees to take the restrictions away from the use of the other funds, and it's going to have to be a partnership between the two of us to get that done. So I thought he could address maybe the process that we need to go through in order to achieve that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties. It just so happens that the Board of Directors of ALC is in town today, and I will take this proposal to them for approval. Try to be as persuasive as I possibly can. I think it makes sense. But I will know by the end of the day, and as I expect, there will be AOC support for this, we'd be happy to take it into the revenue committees as an amendment or some other means.
Any questions?
If I understand the response from Mr. Riddell, we should know something from his legislative committee as to the county's desire to proceed with that kind of legislation, and that would be sometime today that you would know that. Is there a possibility we could go ahead and defer on package 140 then, Madam Chair?
I don't see any reason why not, unless there's further discussion or concern from the committee. Were these statutes, Director, put in place when Measure 5, that type of implementation to, when we worked on Measure 5 to implement it, were these just been long-term statutes?
Well, Madam Chair, as Gil discussed during the public hearing last week, the history of the funds goes back to, I believe, 1987. And we were given some additional dollars to help support the work of the counties. Before that time, the counties were responsible for all industrial properties that were worth less than $5 million, and the department only did things that were over $5 million, or what we call principal or primary industrial properties. The conclusion of the work that was done in 87 was that the counties needed more help on the lower end values, and that's why the shift of that block, and that's why there's that dividing line at the 5 million value level. And with the shift of responsibility to the department, then there was some money that was identified out of the grant program funds that was to support that. So they were tied together at that time, and they haven't been disconnected.
Butler, would you like to be a subcommittee of one and work with the counties and the department to make sure? I guess my concern is to not only find a relating clause, and is this agreeable to you, Elizabeth, to work with the counties and have this statutory change?
Madam Chair, if Gil's Board of Directors is willing to support it, we'll work with them and find a bill and work with the Revenue Committee chairs and get it done. It's really something that we feel that we need to have the county's agreement that this ought to go forward. But if we do have that, then we should be able to get it accomplished.
I would be delighted to assist the parties and be an ad hoc committee of one to assist.
And I think with recognizing the time frame we have in this process that needs to be shepherded through the process, and someone will need to babysit that, and you're willing to do that, Gil?
Madam Chair, I am.
So we're becoming an ad hoc committee of three.
Senator Dukes.
And assuming that the measure passes, the outcome is only that you would be able to spend money that you're now receiving for different appraisals than you're using it for now, correct? Which would then ideally generate more revenue to the counties, right?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes. That's correct. What we would do is go back and look at the total amount of work we have to do, because it wouldn't eliminate work, but it would give us more flexibility on how to focus the resource that we have. And you know, for example, the committee decides to recommend only the other funds part of the package, we could use the appraisal resource differently and focus some of that. I'm sure we would put at least one person into our centrally assessed program. We desperately need support there. So it would give us the ability to look at what our overall appraisal resource is and put it where it's needed most, instead of having this sort of artificial restriction between the secondary and principal industrial properties.
You talked about moving someone to centrally assessed properties. Will your budget look any different that we approve?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, I don't believe so.
See, and that's what I was getting to. I don't think we need to hold up the budget. I mean, if that piece passes, it passes. And they can target different appraisals and therefore hopefully come up with more money for the counties, not for the state. So I think we can move forward with the budget on this particular one, put the money into the county grants that we want to put into it, put the money into the state revenue appraisals that we want to, and then which particular appraisals they target will be a result of what they're allowed statutorily to do, which is not our function. I guess what I'm saying is I don't think we need to hold up the budget in order to be able to for them to do what they want to do. That's going to be a substantive committee issue, and we'll all get to vote on it on the floor, hopefully.
Thank you. I think that Senator Dukes is absolutely right. I would like to know what the work plan is. We've heard three centrally assessed for the high-value complex type work. I would like to know, first of all, we've had a shortfall of revenue this morning announced of over 50%, from $1.99 million down to something in the city of $9 to $1 million. So it could be as much as over 50% reduction in value. I would like to know where we are going to place the three centrally assessed folks and what the work plan is for the fourth position that's involved here. I would like to be able to have an opportunity to work with Director Archenko and her staff to know that we're going to get and why, you know, why we've moved from why we've moved from 3.8 with seven positions down to 900,000 with four positions. That doesn't sound like we're. It sounds like we're maybe headed the wrong direction. I would like to get a work plan.
Madam Chair, I'm happy to give members all the time that they want to do things. I assume Director Harchenko could tell you right now what she's going to do with the people under every scenario that we have thrown out in the course of this budget. And the reason we've dropped down under there, my understanding is because we're talking about pulling money out of their option package and giving it to the counties in the form of grants. They originally proposed not giving so much to the counties, and as we are now talking about giving them and funding eight positions. And with those eight positions, they were going to bring in that $3-something million worth of revenue, and the counties came in and said, we want more in grants, and we're talking about getting them up to their $5 million in grants. And that money, I mean, they can't both spend the money, so it comes out of the option package that revenue had proposed. That am I missing something? It often happens, so it's entirely possible.
Sue, can you clarify any of this, or we can have the director perhaps speak to it?
Madam Chair, I think in terms of where they plan to put this down and what revenues that might generate would be better addressed by Director Harchenko.
Okay, Madam Chair, if we were to get seven positions, which includes the general fund piece and the other funds piece, we would put two people into our county support area, training. One position would be doing training for appraisers out in the field. Another position would be put in the field for additional support directly to county offices. The other five would stay in the main building here and would be doing appraisal work. Two would be due, unless the restrictions are lifted on the use of the other funds, which is a separate issue, two would be put into the secondary industrial property area, the $1 to $5 million, and three would be put into the higher value area, centrally assessed properties and probably a little bit of the higher value industrial. The folks in that area tend to do double duty depending upon the time of the season. Each year, there's certain times there's more work in the utility area. Once that's done, then they can do the high level industrial appraisals. So if we had seven, we would have two in the direct support, five in the appraisal. Two of those in the appraisal would be in the secondary industrial properties. Three would be in the centrally assessed. When we gave you the revenue estimate of the $3.88 million, that was based on looking at five appraisers going into our valuation section and three of them working in the centrally assessed area. If you decide to hold back the $406,000 of general fund, under current law, we could not put anyone into centrally assessed. We would still put the two into the direct support to the counties, one for the training, one out in the field for the field support, and two into the secondary industrial property area. Those properties, the highest value there is $5 million. And I do apologize to the committee for the change in the estimate on the amount of revenue that would be generated to the counties by the reduced package. I went and tried to verify this morning with the staff to be sure that if all we had were two folks working in the secondary industrial properties, what a realistic estimate of how much revenue, how much more value would go on the roll. And they said it was $900,000 to $1 million for the biennium, not 1.9. But that's because of the limitation on the use of those resources to that very narrow window. It's a large number of accounts, but they're small value per account. So that's how, if we had four, that's how we would use the four, two plus two. If we had seven, it would be two plus two plus three. And obviously, the higher value accounts are the places where the property tax value increases potential is the greatest.
Madam Chair, if I may, it appears that the ROI on our invested dollar, the return on investment, as originally projected, by using the $920,000, $921,000 was something over 4 to 1, 4.13 to 1, something in that vicinity, and drops down to a potential low of 1.75 to 1, and with an upper level of about 1.94 to 1. So I'd just like to know that we're headed in the right direction on this package, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, just without trying not to be presumptuous, just a clarification for the record: the money that's generated locally, 40% of that will go to the state in terms of ultimately in terms of the school funding. So it is still primarily local revenue, but in effect, 40% of it is for statewide uses. Just want to clarify, it's not county money versus state money you're talking about. It's really both.
Representative Hayden?
We're in work session. We are now in work session. Madam Chair, some years ago I sat on a committee where I was hearing audit reports on auditing doctors under the health plan. And the gentleman testifying said, we go in and audit, and when we find they've overcharged on purpose or by mistake, we make them pay it back. And I said, that's good. What happens when you find out that they have undercharged? He says, we pay no attention to that. That's their mistake. You know, we don't pay them. I said, that doesn't seem fair. Now, my question here is, what if we do all this auditing and we find out that these industrial properties are overappraised and that they should really go down in value? Are we going to say, well, good, okay, yeah, we lose, you win? Or are we going to say, think about this for a while?
The marketing dynamics are changing, the market dynamics.
I'd like very much, Elizabeth, to have you respond to what Representative Hayden just said, because I'm sure you have a policy on that. But also, if you could kind of address as best you can Representative Butler's concern that he mentioned a minute ago.
Okay. Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, our objective is to get the right value on the roll. So if property is valued more than it should be, we will certify to the counties what is the correct value. We don't just pass over them if they're overvalued. So the objective is correct value. What we've learned over time is that on average, generally, more properties are undervalued than overvalued. But we don't pass over. The idea is to get the correct value. We also have an appeals process that taxpayers know well and take advantage of. So the objective is correct value on the roll.
Well, I appreciate that, and I think that should be the policy. When it hits the ground, the people that are working, are they instructed, the appraisers, are they instructed that your mission is the absolute correct value, and if you find out that these are overvalued, then you're to reduce the value, and we probably won't be able to fund the position next year. Is the unspoken message that unless values are increased, there won't be funding for these positions?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, the funding for the positions and the value on the roll are completely disconnected from one another. If you approve the funding for these positions, that funding is there, and it's not contingent on what we do to produce additional value on the property tax roll that then flows through into the local system. So no, they are not told that. They are told that their job is to get their work done, and there are expectations about the number of evaluations that they do and other jobs that they have to do. But there's absolutely no connection made with our staff about revenue at the local level and what they're doing. Their job is to get those values right.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I think this is the same kind of philosophical discussion we have with traffic patrol officers.
Thank you, Mr. Hayden.
Madam Chair, you wanted me to address Representative Butler's concerns, and I appreciate that that concern, because what we've got here is a system where over the years, the responsibility for the property tax system has been shared between the county assessors and tax collectors' offices and the State Department of Revenue. Over time, a certain amount of responsibility for getting value on the roll has been shifted by the legislature to the Department of Revenue as an efficiency measure, because we have a lot of counties out there who don't have the staff who have the very specific expertise in those very complex properties like utilities, like high tech, like chemical plants, like food processing plants, and so we have taken that burden off of them so that they can work on the vast majority of the properties, which are homeowners and commercial property and farm and ranch property. So they do the work that is most effective for them to do at the local level, and we do the work that's most effective for us to do centrally. But what the legislature is doing as it funds our property tax program is supporting the overall property tax system within the state. And the marginal rate of return that comes from adding appraisers is something that we've only just begun to try to evaluate. And I'm assuming that you would be interested maybe in a budget note to have us track the production of the staff, how many appraisals we're getting to, how many more with the additional staff, how we're targeting that resource, and especially if we're able to get a freeing up of the limitation on the other funds, how that affects our administration.
Thank you very much, Director Archenko. I've got a question for staff to make sure that my calculations are correct. On $520,000, or $515,000, if 40% of whatever is collected is schools, which directly benefits the state of Oregon, our budget at the state of Oregon. If I calculate that correctly, I'd have to take 520 divided by 0.4, which is the school's amount, in order to come up with a break even for the state of Oregon. And that break even in my calculation appears to be nearly $1.3 million. As opposed to the 900,000, somewhere between 900,000 and a million. So I know that it assists us in our property rolls, our getting the correct amounts assessed and reported on the rolls, but I would like to know what's happened over the weekend to move us from 1.9 down to 900 to a million, 900,000 to $1 million. And that's why I'm asking for an opportunity to work with Director Archenko and Mr. Riddell and just to find out. So that I have some good graphs relative to the personal property issues or the personal income tax issues. I think maybe I better look with Director Archenko and her staff at maybe some of the issues relative to some of the property tax issues, whether or not we're close to the marginal dollar there too. And that's what I'm asking. That's why I'm asking that we be allowed to defer on package 140.
Representative Witt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I think Representative Hayden brought up a very valid point here. Namely, we don't know necessarily if we reevaluate these properties that they might not go down as well as up, particularly when you're in a slower economic time. These larger industrial properties are the ones that are probably the most volatile. And I think some of this involves an assessment of intangibles as well. Maybe Director Archenko could respond to that.
Madam Chair, Representative Witt, with respect to industrial property, intangibles are not a part of their value. Intangibles are a part of the value for centrally assessed properties. What we discovered over the years is that, especially with the very large complex properties, it's a challenge for the property owner to report everything. And when we go out and do a physical appraisal, we find things that they may not have reported on their annual industrial or returns, and those things need to go on the roll. So there's a lot of correcting of value that happens when we do a physical reappraisal. Having more people will allow us to get out and actually physically visit more properties. Right now what we're doing on this, particularly on the centrally assessed side, is mostly work by correspondence. There's a lot of schedules and information that the companies submit, but we're not getting out because we don't have the staff to do it. So I think Representative Witt's point about the effect of the economy and values fluctuating is absolutely correct. But and Representative Butler, the only thing that happened over the weekend was what happened this morning when I went in and talked to my appraisal staff and I said, are you sure? Because we're representing to this committee what these positions will be able to produce. And I said, in light of the fact that if the general fund goes away and it's only the other fund package and we can only use those positions for the secondary industrial properties and direct support to the counties, are you sure about 1.9? And they said, no, we're not. Because what I think they forgot about the limitation on the use of the people. So I apologize for that.
No, that's fine.
Representative Butler moves that we have a work group put together with himself and Gil and the director. You've heard the discussion. Any objection to holding on 140 and putting together the work group? Not so moved. Sue?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members, the next policy option package for you to make a decision on is policy option package 160. And this is the package that would add $996,890 general fund and 9 positions, 9 FTE, to increase compliance and education efforts in the cigarette tax program. Originally, I was going to recommend that you eliminate this package from the budget and direct the department to continue working with the Legislative Fiscal Office and the Oregon State Police to determine how best to approach this issue of non-compliance in this area. The department believes strongly that it should focus on education efforts. The Legislative Fiscal Office believes that the non-compliance may require more of an enforcement approach and believes there is the potential for an effective combination of both education and enforcement, perhaps at a lower cost by using to some extent the pool of retired Oregon State Police officers. Since you're already going to defer on package 140, I would just recommend, rather than eliminating this package, that you defer on this one also. My recommendation for elimination is based on the fact that if some resolution could be reached, perhaps the resources for these efforts could be added in an end-of-session bill rather than holding this budget up. But again, since you're already going to defer on one package, why not on two? Discussion?
Senator Dukes.
Well, just for whatever it's worth, I like 160, the way the agency brought it in. So.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hayden.
I'd like to go on record as saying I support policy option package 160. Also, if we must refer it, I will vote aye on that motion.
Thank you, Representative Hayden. Any further discussion? Council recommendation is to defer package number 160. So moved by Representative Butler. Any further discussion? Not so moved.
Do we have some assurance that the issue will come back before us? I mean, I'm happy to do it later as long as it doesn't get lost somewhere along the line. It wouldn't make any sense to me to lose this one entirely.
And LFO said that we are not, that is not our intention, is to work out whether we're going to have state police be involved in the collection of the illegal trafficking and cigarette tax. It's losing us a lot of money. And I think when we look at the charts, we realize that the loss of income in cigarette tax money is not because so many people stopped smoking cigarettes because of the gray black market or whatever you want to call it.
I just wanted to mutter that it seems that Oregon nonetheless has one of the best percentages of recapture of that, and we're doing that the way the Department of Revenue currently runs things, which is not real heavy-handed. And so I'm hoping that as we get to this at the end, that we will still be able to have that discussion as to what method we think. I mean, I'm not sure, and I could certainly be convinced, but I'm not sure I want to squeeze the last drop of blood out of the turnip unless I know what the consequences will be for the state of Oregon is getting heavy-handed. If our rate of compliance is good, given the method that we've been using, and we can step up that method and make it even better, I want us to make sure, and a lot of times these packages come back to us in the last day of the session or the day before the last day, and we don't have the opportunity to have that discussion. I would just not like the state to suddenly become heavy-handed in this without having had the opportunity for a discussion.
Will you be willing to work with Emiko and my work group and help with this?
Sure, we got a work group on this one, too?
We're going to get a work group on this. Representative Hayden.
Chair, I would like to join that work group.
Okay. Representative Josh, do you have a comment?
I don't want to join the work group.
Madam Chair, I have a comment. I don't care to join the work group, but
okay.
I do have a comment, and that is that the numbers that I've seen in the House Revenue Committee indicate that we have a serious problem with noncompliance. That revenues are dropping precipitously, much, much more quickly than any studies would show smoking is dropping. And I question if this route is the correct way to increase revenues by going out and being more heavy-handed. But clearly we have a noncompliance problem. The noncompliance problem, I believe, is associated with the high tax rate. And there's a strong incentive for people to avoid the tax rate. So I do think we have a problem. I question if this is the right direction.
Representative Butler.
Madam Chair, I think Representative Witt has made the point exactly, and that is that with a high tax rate and a non-compliance rate, it's not necessarily an education issue as much as it is an enforcement issue. And to approach this from primarily the education standpoint is about the wrong direction, I think, to come from. And I think you need to backdoor this thing, and that's my own personal opinion, and I hope that the ad hoc committee, which includes Senator Dukes and Representative Hayden, would approach it from a combination of making sure that enforcement is looked to as a method of making sure that these folks are getting the job done. The industry indicates, or the marketers indicate, that they believe that tobacco is down by about 2%. It shows that over the last 4 years, the actual market has dropped nearly 20%, and that leaves you about an 18% noncompliance.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Wood.
Yeah, I would add to that. The people that are avoiding our tobacco taxes know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not a question of educating them. They know what they're doing. If we have a problem, it's an enforcement problem.
And like we saw from what the department brought us on the Internet, you know, you can get on the Internet and order cigarettes in states that have a 5% tax or whatever, and avoid it totally. Who else? Representative Hayden.
Well, Madam Chair, I would take an opposite point of view, if I may, with all respect. I appreciate the department policy, the agency policy of education. I think that's the wise thing to do. I think for government to be too coercive, even if it gets the desired governmental result, it may not get the result that the citizens themselves desire. In our Natural Resources Committee, we're hearing a constant flow of information from the Department of Forestry, the Department of Agriculture, even the DEQ, Madam Chair, about the fact that education is foremost on their agenda, and regulation and coercive enforcement is last. So I would say that education is a good thing for this agency.
As you can tell, we have a lot of opinions on this committee.
And perhaps, Madam Chair, if I may, the ad hoc committee, I would like to make sure that we know what, as again, industry indicates that there's about an 18% shortfall, a little over 18% shortfall. I'd like to know what portion of the shortfall is as a result of education and can be picked up through education, and what portion can be picked up through enforcement.
Madam Chair, just to throw into the mix, we can't do anything about the internet sales. Unless we're ready to go start knocking on doors and say, did you get more than one case from carton from ABC Tobacco over the internet, my guess is we don't have access to those records. If that is a growing part of it, we're not going to get there.
There's some things government just cannot control, like the internet. Any further discussion? If not, Representative Butler moves Package 160 be deferred and a work group is appointed, Senator Dukes, Representative Hayden, and Representative Butler with LFO to work out this package. And like Senator Dukes said, I hope we can bring back the package sooner than later. Any objection? If not, so moved. We'll close. We do need to do the budget notes next.
We have one more package, Madam Chair, and that is the package in the governor's revised budget, which adds $1,559,708 general fund, 16 positions or 14.6 FTE to generate additional general fund revenues. This is similar to the policy option packages 230, 250, and 260. Which you approved last week. Positions to be added for increased taxpayer education, assistance, and enforcement activities. What LFO is recommending is that you adjust the amount for revised PERS rates and PERS savings on new hires, as well as the reduction in the Attorney General hourly rate. And that recommended reduction equals $13,342 general fund.
New discussion.
I'd move the governor's revised budget addition and the LFO's recommendation in accordance with therewith as adjusted.
Discussion? Senator Dukes.
It's been too long. What do we get out of this one?
Madam Chair and Senator Dukes, if you'll bear with me.
Sure.
I feel better now.
Ask the agency, so I don't have to drive through all my papers if they could respond.
The amount of revenue generated.
It's about $1 billion, I think, wasn't it? Just make up for all the old.
More than.
It's about a 5-to-1 ratio.
7.5.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Any other discussion? Heard Representative Butler's motion.
I did move.
You did? You're all right?
Yes.
Okay. Any objection? Not. So moved.
Yes, and if you could bear with me, Madam Chair and members, I'd like to drop down to the bottom of that page where I've got statement of expectations, because it's related to what you just approved, as well as the other packages I mentioned, 230, 250, and 260. And what the department has been doing is providing information on the additional revenues generated from a result of adding these staff. And it's expected that at some point in the future, the cost to add new staff will eventually be more than the revenues generated. And what Legislative Fiscal Office would like to see and would like you to adopt as a statement of expectations, that when the department comes back with the information on the additional revenues generated, that it includes, to the extent that it can, the incremental results of adding the new positions, not just an overall average, for example. And then this information could be used to establish a basis for a cost-benefit analysis that would aid in future decisions in terms of the addition of collection and auditing staff.
So the statement of expectations is relating to those packages plus your recommendation today.
Right, to the additional, basically to the new general fund that's provided.
We need a motion to accept the statement of expectations.
Yeah,
Representative Johnson, so move.
I would move that statement of expectations.
The question and discussion.
Discussion.
Madam Chair, when we're looking at incremental, we've added bits, pieces, and chunks, and I would like that to be fairly specific, that we know the estimated incremental of each of the positions, as opposed to going when 10 could generate $10,000 a month, and the addition of 10 more, now it appears that the average drops down a little bit. Could we have kept it at the same level of increment if we added five, for instance, so in small clusters there. So I just added in each of the new positions, incremental results adding each of the new positions approved by the 2001 legislature. I don't know whether it'll be by an each, but if we could do it in smaller chunks than 5 to 10 positions at a time, it would be nice to know.
Do you want to comment on that? Is there something that the department can do?
Madam Chair, would request that the department respond to that as to whether or not they can give you that degree of specificity.
Each of, in effect.
That would be my hope. But
Director Harchenko, do you want to come up and respond to that?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Elizabeth Harchenko. We don't add people in a vacuum. We add people, we improve our automated systems, and we're always trying to innovate and make ourselves more effective. So I can't represent to you that we will be able to isolate the individual additional revenue from each position in this package. Because we've got new systems coming on during the next biennium that are going to make everybody more productive. So we certainly believe that we're returning well beyond the cost of investment right now in the new positions. We will continue to report back during the interim. We stay in touch with Sue on how we're doing. This is going to be a big lump to swallow. It's going to take quite a bit of work to integrate, train, and get all these people going. But we've committed to you revenue production. We'll meet that commitment. And we'll do the best that we can to let you know how we're doing in terms of whether the marginal rate of return is actually flattening out. But we're nowhere near the point where the cost to add someone is more than the revenue they're going to bring in. Well, that's a long, long way off, and it should never happen.
Thank you, Director Archenko. As it is right now, when we add the $1.56 million for the 16 14.6 FTE by generating 7.9 gross, we're at a 5.061 return on investment. And I submit that we're probably, and I'd like to know, and that's what the state expectations of all drop each of at that point, the new positions. But I would like to know at some point that we are in fact getting closer and closer to where we've gone over the top, and of course, as you say, you've got some automatic collection activity, automation that's going to enhance the department here. So I would move the statement of expectations as presented to us at that point.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Any further discussion?
Yes, Madam Chair. Just to continue the discussion of expectations a little bit, I made the statement several times before, and I just want to make it one more time. During hearing the department budget, it seems to me that the statement of expectations of this committee, and this may be perfectly appropriate, this is after all, it was a means committee. It is not a policy committee. It is a revenue-generating committee. But I don't believe that I had heard a statement of expectations is that we want 99.8% of the businesses and property in Oregon to be on the rolls. that we want to collect 97.3% of that in statistical figures. What I hear is we want to increase the rate of return. We want more property tax. That has been our mission and our expectation. And as I say, that may be appropriate for this committee, but it, philosophically, it bothers me. It isn't a matter of compliance, it's a matter of revenue.
And I think you're right. I think what we want to see is to make sure that we have everybody educated to know what they want, but not always be trying to get more and more dollars. Representative Dodge, any other comments? Any objection? If not, the statement of expectations will be accepted as read.
Madam Chair and members, now we have the budget notes that have been requested by subcommittee members. The first two come from Representative Hill's Advancing E-Government Subcommittee. These have been approved by the co-chairs. The first one would require the Department of Revenue to move the hosting of its web-based internet information services to the Department of Administrative Services. So I understand it. The Department of Revenue is comfortable with this budget note. The second budget note would require them to report to the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology by January 1st, 2002 on the cost effectiveness of the department's use of the backup services at the Burns Archive Center. Again, this note has been approved by the co-chairs. And I would point out to you that this is somewhat revised from what Representative Hill had requested. And he had requested that the Department of Revenue report to this committee on how, not if, it will use the services at Burns. The reason why it's come to you in a revised form is because upon getting information from the department on the cost, the preliminary estimates of the cost of what it would mean to them in terms of using the backup services, it quite frankly is a lot more expensive for them than what they're doing now. And so rather than actually require them to start using those services, we would recommend that they just be required to report on the cost effectiveness. Just to give you some figures, I believe that at $17 a gigabyte, it would cost about, well over $300,000 a year for them to use these services. Right now, they do their backup and walk over to the Archive Center here in Salem, and I think the storage is well under $10,000 a year, so there is quite a bit of difference between the two.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dukes.
So exactly what do we expect to get out of the budget note? If we know in advance that it's more expensive to use the burn site, when we forced lottery over to Burns, we did it because we wanted to get the infrastructure over to Eastern Oregon and because we were concerned about earthquakes and things like that, and mostly earthquakes, and not having all of that stuff in the same spot. It seems to me that if we want to take that into consideration, we ought to put that into the budget note. But if all we're talking about is cost effectiveness, it sounds like we already know in advance that it's not going to be cost effective to make them go to Burns. So I don't get the point for the budget note.
Madam Chair and Senator Dukes, the only thing that I would add is that these were just rough estimates, although...
yeah, but he's been rough there.
This, again, was a request from the Advancing E-Government Subcommittee. And as I understand it, even the Burns Archive Center would not be, I mean, it's what's called a warm site, so that if everything crashed here in Salem, it's not like having what's called a hot site, which the department has already up in Washington. So I think what you're going to get out of this budget note is a report.
Madam Chair, then could we at least stuff in something about any mitigating benefits to using the Burns site? I mean, if Representative Hill really wants to move forward with this, that's fine with me. We can always give an agency more work to do. But could we at least throw in that there might be some mitigating. I mean, I like the burn site. I always have. And I think that there are some extenuating circumstances for using the burn site because it's so far away from the Cascadia Fault that we might actually be able to continue operating. So could we throw some mitigating stuff in there so that we don't just make them do a report when we know what the answer is going to be before we ask the question?
Madam Chair and Senator Deuce, I would say certainly you could expand cost effectiveness to include, you know, a whole range of things, not just, you know, the absolute dollar cost of doing backup at Burns versus, you know, backup
right.
here, but that it could also include even some intangibles and other things.
I'd like that, Madam Chair. To ask agencies to do work just for the sake of doing work tends to trouble me.
Are we discussing the Eugene Timms and Jeanette K. Hanby Archives Center?
The very same.
I think that's one and the same.
All right.
Representative Johnson. Any other further comment on this?
So really, you're talking about cost effectiveness and the potential intangible benefits of the department's use of the backup.
Yeah.
The
you
cost
have that wording too? Yes. Are we going to approve these individually, or are you just
Usually we do them individually.
As to budget notes 1 and 2, which came from us from the e-government subcommittee, I would move that we adopt both of those, and the second one as amended.
Discussion? Objection? Not so moved. Budget note number 3.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, this budget note requires the Department of Revenue to work with the various licensing agencies in Oregon to ensure that out-of-state businesses licensed in Oregon are matched to the department's taxpayer records to ensure that the businesses are paying the appropriate taxes on their Oregon income. And your subcommittee member, Representative Butler, requested this budget note.
Would you like to just speak to your budget note first?
Well, I don't know whether I would after everybody gets audited or get a letter from Internal Revenue.
Sure. I'm just going to say right there as we go
by. He was wearing a fake mask at the time. Gretchen Marks knows and mustache. Madam Chair, this addresses the issue of the privilege licenses which we have throughout the state. The Department of Revenue is unique in that it can't share information the other way, but all of these various privilege licenses can be shared with the Department of Revenue. And so the Department of Revenue is in a unique position to be able to make sure that those folks who have licenses within Oregon should be filing business licenses and licenses to do business, should be filing some kind of records with the department if, in fact, they are doing business of any kind in the state of Oregon to show that they're either making money or not making money. And if, in fact, they are making money and paying that tax in an out-of-state situation or not paying, as the case may be, in Washington and Nevada and Wyoming, then we'd ought to know about it. And that would enhance the production of the Department of Revenue.
Any discussion? Any objection to this budget note number 3? If not, so approved. Number 4.
Madam Chair and members, number 4 requires the Department of Revenue to report during the interim to the Emergency Board on the number of its property tax appeals and additional information such as the length of time each case is open, the Attorney General cost per case, and the final resolution of each case, including settlement amounts. And again, this was requested by Representative Butler.
And this is still subject to the co-chair
yes,
approval. Representative Butler, would you like to speak to your budget note number 4?
Again, Madam Chair, this deals with the amount of time that we're getting involved in on a per case basis, and I would like to make sure that the final resolution of the various cases that are before us in property tax appeals are settled in such a fashion that that we are maximizing the benefits after we go through the process of all of the expenditure of the department's time and the Attorney General's time, that we are in fact receiving maximum benefits out of those settlements back to the state for our invested dollar.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Any further discussion? Any objection? If not, budget number four is approved. What else do we need to do on this?
Madam Chair, members, you're done for the moment. You have remaining open policy option packages 140 and 160, which you deferred to a future work session.
All we need to do is set it aside. And we're going to take a 5-minute recess.